Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm delighted to be before you once again. I'm excited about money. December, people want to shop, but I'm excited about money and how to make my money work for me. And tonight we have a special guest, Hubert McIntosh, who's a financial advisor and expert in money management. Hubert, are you there?
Yes, Dr. Val, I'm right here.
I'm so excited to have you. You were one of our sponsors and one of our presenters at Soul Retreat 2014. And I tell you, it was just such a blessing for you to be there because of the fact that, you know, we always have issues about our money.
That's so true.
Now, you know, your company, what's the name of your company?
Well, we have a couple of companies, and so it depends on what arena. Tonight, I wanted to educate or inform people on insurance. So we have a company called McIntosh Insurance.
Okay.
So we want to share some insights regarding insurance in the sense that there are a lot of confusion out there with the marketplace, off-marketplace, affordable health care, more popularly known as Obamacare. So I'm hoping that tonight we'll be able to clear up some of the discrepancies and some of the confusion out there. So with that, I will be on the portfolio. There would be McIntosh Insurance. Our website, there's McIntosh Insurance, insagency.com. So where individuals will be able to get information. But tonight, we hope that we can clear up some of the confusion.
And you're also an expert in finances. You know how to tell people where to put their money for savings accounts, IRAs?
Absolutely. And with that, we have a tax firm called Lifeline Tax. And that website is lifelinetax.com, so people can get information regarding their taxes and asset protection. We're going to talk a little about that tonight also, because it doesn't make sense that if you have it, it's not protected. So we want to also share some insights regarding protecting your assets that you have worked so hard for.
Okay, now, you know, one of the things you mentioned was affordable health care. I think December 15th, is it, where it cuts off for January 2015 for affordable health care?
Yes, and that's a great question, leading question, Doc, because it's not just affordable health care, because you have off-marketplace and you have on-marketplace, so sometimes individual will hear marketplace and they're not sure what it is. The marketplace is where the affordable health care is, in the sense that if someone wants a subsidy, you can get a subsidy only if you go on the marketplace. If you're not interested in a subsidy or you're not eligible for a subsidy, then you don't necessarily have to go on the marketplace. That's where you go off marketplace. So there's some confusion there. So what December 15th is, whether it's the marketplace or off marketplace, in the sense that once your insurance, December 15th is the cutoff for your insurance to be effective the first of the subsequent month. So say, for instance, if your insurance is to be effective January 1st, you have to get that application in and pay that first premium by December 15th so it can become effective January 1st. So if someone misses the December 15th deadline, it doesn't mean that they can't get it. It's just that mean if it goes in after December 15th, then you will not get effective until February 1st. So I wanted to clear that up.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, that did shed some light because the way that they're promoting it, it makes it seem like if you don't fill out your paperwork by December 15th that you won't be eligible to get affordable health care.
No, that's not true. That's confusion there. You have, for you to get the premium tax credit, you have until February 15th. And up to February 15th, February 15th will make you eligible March 1st. After February 15th now, then that open enrollment ends where someone will then now have to wait until next November. So basically you have 3 months. You have December 15th, you have January 15th, you have February 15th. So, you know, I know that there are a lot of confusion out there regarding that, Doc, but that's not so.
Okay, so what about those individuals that have insurance and, okay, they have insurance from the affordable health care, and then they decide that they don't want the insurance that they currently have. Do they have up until March to change it, or do they have to change it December 15th?
That is an excellent, excellent question, because a lot of times if someone had insurance for 2014, what happens? The carrier that you currently have, in most cases, if you don't cancel and they have your payment records or where they can charge you, that insurance will auto-renew. So say, for instance, if you have it up through and come December 15th, you don't cancel your current insurance to try and get on to another one. That insurance become auto-renew. So that's how that part works. So, but then again, it's not worst-case scenario, because if it becomes auto-renew, you can still cancel it and get on, because you have until February 15 to get on to a new plan.
Okay, so the auto-renew, does it? Okay, so even though it auto-renews and you want to switch to another carrier, you can do that by February 15th?
Yes.
Okay, that's good information, because I know that there are people that have questions regarding that. And, you know, because, like I say, they have it out there and it's frightening. And now that all the Republicans are in office and they're trying to cut everything off, people are a little shaky as to what the next step is.
Right, right, definitely. But what if someone is even contemplating, though, if they're contemplating on changing, it's best, it's always best to try and get in, whereas, because if you're going to get effective for January 1st, you try and get in, we're at December 9th, so basically we're at the 11th hour. It's best that that person even go in and cancel their current one. Because the key part is, even if they cancel their current one, they can renew or they can get a new one. But sometimes you don't want that issue, whereas if you're going to change, then you wait December 15 pass, and then you start the other insurance, and then you have this hassle. So I would encourage people, instead of waiting until that December 15th, to take care of that right now. We still have 6 days to do it. I would encourage people to get it. There are many plans out there that's affordable, and there's some confusion in that also. We're going to be discussing that, what's affordable and what's not affordable. You know, there's confusion out there also, Doc. So we're hoping to clear up some of that issue tonight.
Well, let's walk into that, because I want to know what is affordable, because I know that in the marketplace they have like Covenant, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Humana. Now, those individuals that have deductibles, like $900 deductible. When does that year end deductible end? Does it end December 15th for January, or does it end February?
Excellent question, Doc. It's insurance works on a calendar year basis. So say, for instance, your deductible is through till December 31st of a calendar year. So say, for instance, if someone even start their insurance in January or February, insurance ends on a calendar year and then start, you know, for them to calculate the deductible. The deductible is measured by calendar year. So that's an excellent question there. So let's talk about that, because this is one of the biggest confusion with deductible. Okay. All right.
Okay.
What the government, Obamacare has done, and we're using that name since it's more widely known. Sometimes you say affordable healthcare,
yes.
Someone may not even understand. So let's use the term Obamacare. All right. Obamacare came about, and what the government did, the government made some stipulations on insurance company. Before that, there was a free for all with insurance company where they were making the rules as how they wanted it. But the current administration stepped in and says, okay, we're going to change the game up a bit. We're going to say to you the minimum that you should provide. Okay, so what's that? There are 8 essential benefits that they're saying that most people need for health. Say, for instance, previously an insurance company could say, well, for an individual, for a young lady or whatever, they're going to rate maternity as a higher level because they're saying, well, that individual, because she's a female, she can get pregnant. So what has happened now with the current plans that's out there, maternity for a female has to be included, and you cannot rate it that because she's a female in that sense, you're going to cap her and says because she could possibly get pregnant, you're going to charge her more money. You know, so that is one of the things where that has been fixed in the sense. So you have 8 essential benefits that all insurance carriers, if they want to play in the game, they have to provide those services. They have to provide your checkup. You have your annual checkup. Like for a female, it has to include your mammogram, your pap smear, all of that, that's essential for your yearly checkup, whereas it's called preventative care. So the stuff that's for preventative care has to be, no matter which insurance company is, no matter what plan, they have to have embedded in it, they have to have preventative care where you're allowed to have preventative care at least once per year, where in most plans that will be 100% covered. So I wanted to point that out because the confusion comes now with the deductible, and let's dive into the deductible. Because since you mentioned it, Dr. Val, there's out there where you have 4 types of plan currently. You have bronze, you have silver, you have gold, and you have platinum. That's the 4 types of plan you have out there. All right. The bronze plan is naturally going to have a higher deductible. The platinum plan is going to have a lower deductible. But there's an inverse relationship with deductible and premium. The higher the premium, the lower the deductible. The lower the premium, the higher the deductible. So that's how that is structured. So what's the confusion now? All right, the confusion, most bronze plan, you're going to see where it may have a $6,300 deductible. You may have a platinum plan where you could even possibly go down to a $1,000 deductible. But those premiums are going to be humongous.
Hmm.
So the question So the question on the table then is, how do I choose? Because if you're hearing that, well, there's a premium, there's one with a deductible of $1,000, and then there's one with a deductible of $6,300. How do I choose? And this is where the confusion is, Doc. This is, it's a big confusion where people just don't know how to choose. Mm-hmm. So how do they choose? What happens, you know, you have to look at it. Take, for instance, if one has a premium plan that's paying, say, $1,000 a month. Let's use $1,000 a month. The premium is $1,000 a month, and the deductible is $1,000.
Wow.
The question you have to ask yourself, how many times would I have to go to the doctor to reach a deductible of $1,000?
Mm-hmm.
Can you answer that question, Doc?
Well, it depends on if you're a sickly person or not.
Brilliant. There you go. Because here it is, Doc. If the person is not sickly and that person is going to go one time or two times to the doctor per year, an average doctor visit may be, what, $250? Say, for instance, if someone has no insurance, an average doctor visit is going to be about $250. For you to reach a $1,000 deductible, you have to go to the doctor four times for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this person paying a $1,000 premium, but per month, so they're paying $12,000 for the year, but they still have to reach that deductible of $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only way, in most cases, where you're going to reach those deductibles is you have to go to the hospital. Because that is when that's going to kick in, because a hospital visit can be anywhere. It can be $5,000, can be $10,000, can be $50,000. So once you have insurance now, what happens, the insurance company is going to pay their portion and the patient will have to pay their portion, which would be the deductible.
Okay,
let me read there, Doc, and let you digest that and throw back any questions at me there so I can address.
Okay, so the question I want to ask is, if the deductible is $1,000 and say you go to the doctor and you haven't absorbed that and then you wind up going to the hospital, so does that mean that all of your hospital stay is covered except for $1,000?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's just a great way to explain it there. Yes, if the hospital bill is $10,000, if it's $50,000, if it's $100,000, that person with a $1,000 deductible, that's all there is. Because what happened coincide with that, there's something also called Dr. Val, maximum out of pocket. So, because you can have the deductible of $1,000 and the maximum out of pocket can be $2,000. So, mm-hmm. anytime that person reaches maximum out of pocket, the excess, whether it's $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, the insurance company covers it all. So, it works the same way for the person with the $6,000 deductible. If the bill from the hospital is $1,000, that person is responsible for their maximum out-of-pocket, which where if a deductible is $6,000, the maximum out-of-pocket could be $9,000, could be $10,000, depending on the plan, and the insurance company will pay the excess.
Mm-hmm. So do you recommend that people choose a higher deductible, so and then keep their premiums low?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that is one of the number one thing I want to share with your listeners, because here is what is missing in the picture. Here's what's missing in the picture. If someone has a high premium and a low deductible, okay, what happened? That person that paying $1,000 a month, they end up paying $12,000 for the year in premium, while you may have another individual who's basically paying $200 a month, $200 a month, Doc, and saving $800 a month in premium. So that person has the ability to save $9,600 in premium. So you look at that, so you're saying, but your question could be back to me and says, but Hubert, that person will have a higher deductible. Okay.
Right.
But if using the same $1,000, Doc, they managed to save $9,600. So, you know, if it be that they need to pay that deductible, they can pay that $6,300 out of that $9,600 that they save. So that is where, when someone is getting insurance, you need to have a knowledgeable individual talking to you about that, your options, because a lot of times people will go and they just get a quote and they don't understand their insurance. So that's why I recommend that people who are seeking, and let that agent explain to you. Let that agent explain to you. You have a lot of agents sometimes, because this time is a busy time for agents. Sometimes they want to get someone off the phone in 5, 7, or 10 minutes. You got to be careful about that, because you're spending your money. You need to understand what you're spending it on.
That's good information, because of the fact that I've seen when I'm driving on the highway, I see people with signs up saying affordable health care inside, so they can actually, you know, like go in and fill out. But then I've had cases where I had friends who were working and they had affordable health care and they lost their job.
Yes.
And then their insurance wind up being canceled. So what things are put in place for individuals like that who lose their job after the enrollment closes, but while the enrollment was open, they had a job, their insurance was secure. So what happens to those individuals?
Well, what happened, you still have, even with affordable health care, you still have something called COBRA. You still have COBRA, where an individual is guaranteed, even if they lost their job, they're guaranteed that basically they can still have insurance through COBRA. So that's another discussion there, because what happens is the portion, if it was a case where the employer was paying the premium, what happens there, if they lost the job, then that employer is not paying that premium anymore. So now it becomes a greater challenge for that individual. So your question leads right back into what we were talking about. If that person had a premium of $1,000 and they lost their job, Doc, it's very hard for that person to pay a $1,000 premium. But if they had, if their premium was $200, they will still have their insurance, even though it may not be the Cadillac, but they still have their insurance. And that is the discussion that needs to take place. So with that being said then, as I was mentioned, the $9,600, back to the individual that say that, have that opportunity to save that $9,600. Doc, one other thing I wanted to mention to you is where this is not being communicated enough. One of the greatest benefits that the IRS as offered through Congress to United States citizens and residents is people are not taking advantage of it. It's called a HSA, health savings account. Here is the power of a health savings account from a tax point, Doc, and from a savings point. Take that same individual who saved $800 per month. That individual could open a health savings account, put a portion of that $800 in a health savings account, whereas if they're ever going to need that deductible, then that money is in a health savings account. But it doesn't stop there. The benefit doesn't stop there, Doc. The person who contributes to a health savings account, whether a health savings account for a single person, they can get a write-off on their tax return of $3,350 for a single person, and if it's for a married person with just one person on the plan, there's a write-off of $6,500. But if it's a couple, then the write-off is $13,000. And this is what a lot of people are missing, knowing that there is that opportunity where you can reduce your taxable income by taking that same money that you would have put into a higher premium. You take a lower premium, you save that money, you put it into a health savings account, and you have that money there to pay your deductible, and you're also getting a tax benefit because it reduces your taxable income, so you're paying less tax.
Now, do you have to have a certain amount
of
that account?
But what if I tell you it gets better? It gets better because that money now that's in the health savings account, if you use that money to pay your deductible, Doc, that money is coming out tax-free. So it went in tax-free, and it's coming out tax-free. Most vehicles, if you use an IRA or 401k, if that money goes in tax-free, Doc, I guarantee you when it's coming out taxable. Health savings account is one of the only vehicles that the IRS allows that your money goes in tax-free and your money comes out tax-free.
Wow. Do you have to have a certain amount in there to get that deductible?
Excellent question. Whatever, so say for instance, the single person is limited to $3,350. So say for instance, if that person even puts in $4,000, the tax benefit that they can get as a single person is only $3,350, where that reduces their taxable income. For a married person, just being married, it doesn't have to be the two people in the insurance, but a married person can claim $6,500 for 2015. And if both husband and wife have a high deductible plan, they can get a total tax benefit of $13,000, reducing their taxable income. Doc, if you look at it, if someone is in a 25% tax bracket and they can reduce their taxable income by $13,000, Doc, that's $3,250 in taxes that person is saving just by using a health savings account.
Now, does it work the same even if you're self-employed?
Oh, definitely, yes. The key part, the only thing, the number one requirement, or basically the only requirement for health savings account is that you have to have a high deductible plan. That person that I mentioned to you that has a $1,000 deductible, if you have a $1,000 deductible, you're not eligible for a health savings account. It has to be a high deductible plan where the deductible for a single person has to be at least $1,200. So $1,000 would not make you qualify as a high deductible. High deductible starts at $1,200 and up, whether up to $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And that person, they become eligible to open an L savings account. It's basically almost the same like with an IRA. Like, for instance, with an IRA, you can contribute $5,500. You can contribute $5,500 per year, but if your income is at a certain level, for this year, I think it's $198,000, then you cannot contribute to a Roth IRA, but you could contribute to a traditional IRA. So the key part, as I mentioned there, you have to have a high deductible plan, and you can contribute any amount. You can contribute $50. You can open a plan with $50. So whatever you put into it, up to the $3,350, the $3,350, that's the amount that you can deduct from your tax return.
Okay. Well, that ends our segment on affordable health care. So let's move right into money management because, you know, both subjects require a lot of time because there's so much information, and I really appreciate you condensing it so people will be provoked to think and act to, you know, get their affairs in order as it relates to their health. There's no reason on this earth that any individual should be walking around with no health insurance.
Absolutely, Doc. Absolutely.
If you don't have any income, you wind up getting affordable health care for free because it is set up for, regardless of your financial status, that you can get affordable health care. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What happened? It's structured that way. As I said, the disadvantage one will have is, if you want to call it a disadvantage, they can still have it, but the thing is that you have to deal with the deductible issue. You have to deal with the deductible issue. But I just want to encourage people that just because a deductible may be $6,000, I don't want people to get daunted by that, in the sense that the key part is that you have insurance. And why am I stressing that part, that you have insurance? Because here it is, Doc. If someone goes to the hospital, and you know about this as well as I do, if you go to the hospital, you're in that ER, and that social worker is checking, the very first thing they're checking is, do you have insurance? Do you have it? That's the first question. Yes, the deductible part, the discussion comes afterward. But what that insurance that hospital feels comfortable with, Doc, is that if they do a surgery which going to cost $50,000, what they feel comfortable with is that even though your deductible is $6,000, and you may not be able to pay that deductible right then, they are comfortable in doing that surgery because they know that they're going to get the $44,000 from the insurance company. Mm-hmm. If you don't have insurance, that surgery that could have probably saved your life, Doc, it's sad, but it's true, they may not do that surgery. They may not do that surgery.
They overcharge anyway.
Pardon me?
So they overcharge you anyway. So that $5,000 or $6,000 deductible doesn't really phase them one bit because they'll be getting the bulk of it from the insurance company.
Exactly, Dr. Val. Exactly. And that's what I want to encourage people with. Don't get discouraged because the deductible may be high. Try and get a premium that you can afford. Don't let somebody push you into paying a higher premium by scaring you and telling you that your deductible is going to be too high. You got to look, and as we're talking about money management, you got to look at your finances. You got to look and see what you can afford. Because here it is, Doc. We're talking about, a lot of people get intimidated by the deductible. But what you have to look at, if there's not a serious illness, you will never have to use that deductible. So it's like I use this example to my staff in the office, whereas, okay, if you go to the store and you buy an appliance or something for $2,000, are you going to pay $1,000 for the warranty just in case that appliance goes out? You're not going to pay 50% of the cost of the appliance. So why are people doing it every day with health insurance where they're paying these large premiums thinking that maybe if I have to go, then I have a lower deductible? So it leads right into money management, Doc, where each individual has to look at their finance, what you can afford. So with that being said, moving over the segment from HSA, let's talk about IRA, Doc, because you and I have talked about this. Like, so you have two basic IRAs. You have the traditional IRA and you have the Roth IRA, where basically for this year you can contribute $5,500. The maximum you can contribute, an individual can contribute, is $5,500. If the person is over 50, they can contribute $6,500. The confusion there now is, yes.
Hubert,
yes.
What is an IRA and what is a Roth?
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to clear that up. It's an individual retirement account. It's an individual retirement account where one is traditional and one is a Roth. Basically, Roth came out about 15 years ago. What's the difference there is that what the government decided to do is because 20, 25 years ago, you used to hear about defined benefit plans. What was that then? Where companies used to contribute and set up a retirement plan for individuals. But 20, 25 years ago, that started changing where companies were not doing benefit plans. So individuals would work at a company 20, 25, 30 years, and they don't have any retirement plan. So what the government did, looking at this 30 years ago, 1978, roundabout there, the government says, okay, if companies are not doing this, why don't we create a vehicle that individuals can contribute money towards their retirement account, hence the name Individual Retirement Account. The government decided that, okay, we're not, if this person, this individual wants to save some money for their retirement and their company's not doing it, we're going to give them an opportunity to do it. So it came with a tax write-off in the sense that if that person contributes up to $5,500 per year, they can deduct that $5,500 from their taxable income. So basically, someone can contribute to a retirement account tax-deferred. And let me emphasize tax-deferred, because a confusion is out there where people are thinking it's tax-free. No, it's not tax-free. It's deferred. When that money is coming out in the future, Uncle Sam is going to say, remember me? You didn't pay any tax on it going in, but you're going to pay the tax coming out.
Do you have to pay the taxes coming out in a certain time, or when is it going to be at a point where you can withdraw that without paying a penalty?
Exactly. Great question, Doc. When you get to age 59 and a half, you can start withdrawing that money with no penalty. If you withdraw that money prior to age 59 and a half, you'll have to pay the tax, and you will also have to pay a 10% penalty. But if you wait until after 59 and a half, then you have to pay the tax, but you don't have to pay, you won't have to pay the penalty. So that's the cutoff there with the 59 and a half.
Suppose I get an IRA, can I still withdraw it at 59 without a penalty?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once you get to 59 and a half, you can withdraw your money with no penalty. You just cannot withdraw it before 59 and a half without penalty. So that's the cutoff. It doesn't matter if you are taking that IRA out at 50, 40, 45, 52. It's just that the 59 and a half is that cutoff where once you take it out prior to 59 and a half, there will be a penalty. But once you pass 59 and a half, then there's no penalty.
Okay. So is it better for the individuals to get a CD, a certificate of deposit account, or you get the IRA when it comes to maybe putting money on the side and then an emergency happens and I have to pull it out? Which one is least to give me the least penalty?
Doc, I'm glad you asked that question. And because you ask it, I can answer it. So, Doc, the banks won't tell you this. The banks won't tell you this. The worst investment vehicle that someone can do is a CD. A CD is the worst. And I know you're going to have financial advisors out there who's going to disagree with me, but the worst vehicle you can have is a CD. Is a CD. In the financial arena, you know, you hear it in the bank arena, it's called certificate of deposit. What we call it in the financial arena is a certificate of depreciation. And let me explain why we call it that. Doc, you go into a bank, and the bank pushes this. Oh, Dr. Val coming, we have CDs that's offering you 1.5. You're lucky if you can even get a 1.5%. Most of them are 0.5%, 0.75%, 1%. But if it's an interest, so say let's use 1%. So why do I call it depreciation? Doc, right now, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, inflation is at 2.3%. So, Doc, if you look at it this way, if you put money in and you're earning 1%, but that money is being devalued by 2.3%, so you're getting 1%, but the money is in your CD and it's being devalued by 2.3%. You just lost 1.3% on the money that you thought was making money, but you're losing money. So that's why I say it's the worst vehicle, especially when you have things like IRAs, you have things like annuities where someone can open with a small amount. They can open with a $50, $100, because a lot of times people don't open these vehicles because they're thinking that they have to have a lot of money. You have annuities that you can open with $50 and you earn 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So the same $50 that someone would put in a CD that's earning 1%, they could put it in an annuity that's earned guaranteed now. Let me use the word guaranteed, guaranteed 3%. You know, it's not tied to the stock market, because anytime it's tied to the stock market, no one can tell you that it's guaranteed. If someone tells you, Doc, that anything in the stock market is guaranteed, you run. You run from that person as fast as you can, because if it's tied to the stock market, it's not guaranteed.
Okay. Wow. This is interesting. The things that are being pushed, and we hear that this is the right way to go, this is the right way to invest. And then when you get into a situation and you be trying to pull it out, then you see the manifestation of the error and why it wasn't such a good idea to do it. But I tell you, it's always bothered me. And with IRAs and raw IRA accounts, that when, you know, you want to go get your money, regardless of what it is, they want to tax you all of this money on your own money. It's not fair when you pay taxes to get the money and you're putting it in these systems to save.
You're absolutely right, Doc. You're absolutely right. So I want to point out another thing that I see out there, Doc, where a lot of people, people will be working with a company. And this as a financial advisor, this is one of the shocking things to me. It is so frequent where they will be working at a company, and that company may have a 401k plan. And that company will say, we will match whatever you put in up to 6%. We will match 50%, max out at 3%. It's surprising, Doc, the amount of employees who are not taking that opportunity that that company offers. Because what they're failing to look at, if a company says, we'll match your 401k contribution by 50% up to 3%, what that company is actually doing to that person is giving them a 3% increase in salary. And people are leaving that 3% on the table by not contributing the maximum that they could contribute. Because if they contribute 6% of their salary, the company is going to contribute 50%. So that company would contribute 3% to that person's salary. So basically, they're giving an increase. And here's the scary part, Doc. That same individual will tell you, because at the end of the year, because nowadays companies are not giving much increases, if they do, they will get 3% at the end of the year, and they'll tell you that their employer only gave them 3%. Why they refused to take the other 3%, where they could have gotten 6%, but because they did not contribute to the 401k, they are leaving money on the table, Doc. That's one of the things we see out there, and I want to bring that to people's attention, that if people are giving you free money, take free money. You know, so I just wanted to emphasize that, Doc, you know. So I just want to remind people that some of these insights they can get if they go to lifelinetax.com. Lifeline, just like it says, L-I-F-E-L-I-N-E, tax.com.
Excellent. We're almost running out of time, and I have some callers holding that may have some questions to ask you. So we're going to go ahead and pull in some of our listening audience. I have Shirley holding in Detroit. Shirley, are you there?
Thank you. I've been listening, and then you have a wealth of information, and particularly, you know, when you talked about the health care, so many of us don't know all the entities that are available to us through healthcare, and I thank you for sharing it with us. But I have one particularly about the annuity. Now, you you can start it at $50?
Oh, yes, you have annuities out there that you can start at $50, yes.
What do we start at? Where do we go and look for these at? Do we call the banks, or is there a particular finance company we reach out to? How does one get started into purchasing annuities?
Annuity, that's an excellent question. Annuities can be bought. The two main sellers of annuities are banks and insurance companies. Those are the two main sellers of annuities. But a lot of times, here's the trick in it, Shirley. A lot of times you may say, but why the bank don't tell you that much? Where the bank, you'll have $500, and the bank, even though the bank will sell an annuity, the bank will tell you to put it in a CD. You find that, isn't that surprising? The bank will tell you to put it in a CD because the CD, they're only paying you 0.5%, but they're using your $500 to make much more, while if it was in an annuity vehicle, you could ask for 2 or 3%. So a lot of times the bank will push the CD more because they can lock you in with the CD for 9 months. The CD has these penalties attached to it. And you may ask the question, but why they can't do the same thing with annuities? Annuities are state-regulated. There are certain things that you cannot do with an annuity, like for instance, you have to provide this information to the buyer, and it's regulated by the state insurance company. So the State Department, the Department of Insurance. So Shirley, that's a great question. You need more interest, more information. You can go on our website. You can contact us. You know, my phone number is there. You can go to lifelinetax.com, and you can contact us, and then we'll be able to look at your situation and guide you specifically.
Thank you. Thank you. I really do appreciate that.
No problem.
Because the banks, they do not tell you. They push
right.
Okay,
Dr.
thank
Brown,
you so
Dr. you
much.
Said you had another caller?
Yes. 2175, you're live. Hello, caller 2175. Okay, I guess they may have their phone on mute and don't know how to unmute it.
Okay. Doc, let me point out something while we're waiting on that, because there's something I failed to mention when I mentioned the HSA plan. And I just want to let your listeners be aware. We're at December 9th. It's not too late to get a HSA plan for 2014. What's the benefit? You'll call some people and they'll tell you, oh, don't get it until 2015. But here's the benefit: that if you get it before December 31st, if you open an HSA plan, you can open an HSA plan with $50. So you may say, but Hubert, I'm only going to get the benefit of $50. No, that's not true. If you open the HSA plan in 2014, you have until April 15th to fund that HSA. So, for instance, if someone finds themselves with an extra $1,000 or extra $2,000, they can put that money in to the HSA. They can put that money into the HSA up to April 15th. And if that person files an extension, they have up until October 15th to contribute to it. So don't be dismayed if you may not have the money for 2014. You may not have the money for 2014, but if you open the plan, you have 10 months to fund that plan. So I just want people to be aware of that.
Okay, but do you have to put that certain amount in every month?
No, you can put any amount. You can put any amount. You can put any amount you want. You could put $10. You could put $100. You could put $200. You can put any amount. And then when you get to filing your taxes in 2015, because all of what you're putting is going to be towards the tax year 2014 because you did not file your tax return yet. So say, for instance, if you put in $100 in January, $100 in February, $100 in March, basically all that money that you put in for those 10 months will be considered part of your 2014.
Okay. And there is no penalty if you take it out, because they'll just take it and apply it towards your insurance cost? How does that work?
Great question. If with your HSA plan, anything that you pay for medical related, there is no tax liability. So say, for instance, if you have $1,000 in your HSA and you take $200 to buy a prescription, medication, or whatever it is related to medical, that is tax-free. That's tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take that same $200, take it as a distribution from your HSA, that $200 become a distribution. It's a distribution where you're paying the tax on that, and you're paying a penalty. You're paying a 20% penalty on that for taking it out and not using it for health related.
Okay. Wow. I tell you, time has just really gotten away from us. We're at the close of the show. Are there any closing remarks or any way individuals can connect with you after this show is over in the coming months so that they can get their priorities straight before January 1st?
Doc, thank you very much for that invitation. As I said, I welcome people to go to Lifeline, lifelinetax.com. You'll have our contact information there. The number is 561-244-0062. 561-244-0062 or lifelinetax.com, and you contact me and one of my staff, and you will be able to get information regarding that. The insurance website is MacintoshInsAgency.com. That's Macintosh, MacintoshInsAgency, AGENCY.com. The number there is 561-300-2444. 561-300-2444. So I encourage your listeners to check out the website. Contact us. They can contact us on the web. They can put in a contact request, or they can call us, and then we will get back to them, because we know each individual may have different circumstances, because what I've shared here are generalities, and each person's situation may be specific, where we can dive into and guide that person accordingly. So I just want to thank you, Doc, for giving me this opportunity to share some insights with your listeners. And I just want to encourage them that there are resources out there. The good book says, a wise man seek wise counsel. So thank you very much for giving me this opportunity that I can share insights with your listeners.
Thank you. And also, you do tax returns as well. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's why I keep mentioning LifelineTax.com. Yes, we do tax return, we do tax planning, and we do we look at the holistic view of an individual. Whereas one of the benefits that you get with us, instead of not speaking against anyone, where if you go to an insurance agent is gonna speak to you about insurance. He's just gonna speak to you about that. But you go to a financial advisor. Financial advisor is going to look at your situation, and instead of trying to sell you a product, they're going to look at your situation and see, what can you afford? What are your needs? What are your needs? Because there are needs that individual has. There are needs that a married person may have. There are needs that a married person with children may have. And, with the time that we had, we just didn't get to dive into that with the benefits where individual may have if they have children and or whatever, So each person's situation is going to be different. So we're here where we can assist individuals in making these decisions.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Hubert McIntosh, who's a financial advisor and expert in money management. Thank you, and we look forward to hearing you again on another Hot Topic from the Soul. Good night, and God bless.
Thank you so much, Doc. Good night, listeners.